You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy game day, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we chat on this Tuesday, the Rockets are just a few hours from taking the court at Toyota Center against the Orlando Magic. They're looking to build on a stretch in which they've won 5 of 6 games since the return of James Harden, now 35-13 on the season. They will not have Trevor Ariza tonight, out for at least a week or so with a left hamstring injury. We did not hear Monday whether it was a grade 1 or grade 2, but based on the fact that he's supposed to be reevaluated in a week as opposed to 2 weeks, which is what happened after James Harden had a grade 2, I lean to Ariza having a grade 1 and them simply trying to be cautious with it because he's 32 years old. Other factors that lead me to believe it's a grade 1, as we said in Sunday's recap show, the fact that he attempted to stay in the game, the fact that, unlike Harden, he was initially ruled questionable rather than out, that has me optimistic that it's a grade 1, not a grade 2. Hopefully within a week to 10 days, you'll have Trevor back, but the Rockets will be cautious with him, as they should, because he's 32 years old. The same can be said for Chris Paul, who we now know the exact nature of his soreness on Sunday when Mike D'Antoni didn't say or said that he didn't feel quite right. It turned out that he's dealing with some minor soreness in his right groin. That's newsworthy because it is not the left groin, which had the strain, the adductor strain, in December that kept him out for a few games. So it's not a re-aggravation. It's just simply the minor muscle pull that happens to lots of players over the balance of 82 games. And you're just going to be more cautious with guys who are 32 and managing them over the 82-game grind. I said Sunday, based on Chris's reaction post-game, saying, I'm good, I'm fine, I'll be ready, that I expected him to play today. After taking a closer look at the schedule, I'm going to walk that back just a little bit. It would not floor me if Chris played today, although it might be with a minutes restriction, say to 25 or so, the same way he had on Sunday. But when you look at the fact that the Rockets are home against the Orlando Magic, the type of team that if the Rockets are at Toyota Center and can roll out James Harden, Clint Capella, and Eric Gordon, they should have no major problems with regardless. And then the end of the week, you have two really tough games at San Antonio, at Cleveland. Say what you will about their records. Those are two veteran-laden teams that you know are going to give the Rockets their absolute best shot, their A games. Then maybe it makes sense to be a little more cautious with Chris. So I don't feel any differently about Chris in terms of the nature of the injury than I did on Sunday. I still think it's very minor, nothing to worry about. But just based on the exact schedule this week, the way it works out and how big those latter two games are and how minor this one feels, not that it's a minor game, because certainly the Rockets need to win, especially if they want to stay within striking distance of the Warriors, now 3 games back in the loss column for the West number one seed. You can't give away any game, but I think the Rockets at home against Orlando, they feel pretty good about this game as long as they have James Harden, Clint Capella, and Eric Gordon out there. So if Chris sits out, I think it's less about the nature of the injury and more about just the way the week schedule breaks down. But again, we don't know that he's going to sit out. The Rockets did not have a shoot-around this morning, so I think we'll find out shortly before the game for Mike D'Antoni. We'll have to see exactly how Chris is feeling, and I'm sure there'll be kind of a back-and-forth give-and-take between him and the Rockets. I'm sure Chris wants to play, but the Rockets are trying to keep a larger perspective. So will he play? Will there be a minutes restriction? If he does, we'll have to wait and see. We'll find out before the game. And if you want real-time updates on that, Twitter is the best place to do that, where if you're not following me already, you can do so at Ben DuBose. Now tonight, we'll have full coverage of that game, including our usual post-game show. For now, though, we're actually going to do a bigger picture show in which we look at the item that sent shockwaves over the NBA over the past 24 hours, and that, of course, is the shocking trade of Blake Griffin from the LA Clippers to the Detroit Pistons. Blake Griffin, of course, averaging about 23 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists per game this season with the Clippers. Certainly a very quality player, was drafted first in the 2009 draft. Ironically, that's the same draft that had James Harden pick 3rd and Steph Curry pick 7th later in that same lottery. Blake has never had a career quite to that level, but certainly a very good player in Los Angeles for some time, the face of the franchise since he got there. So certainly it's weird to look at the Clippers for the first time in 9 years and not see Blake Griffin as the headliner or one of the headliners on that roster. But in addition to just the general news, and certainly it's a major transaction for two teams in the NBA. There are some definite Rockets angles here, both in the short term and long term, when you look at the process that led Chris Paul to Houston and whether Chris got a fair shake in terms of the expectations, the reviews of what he did in Los Angeles, and thus what the projections for him are come playoff time with the Houston Rockets. So over this show, what we're going to do is look at everything, certainly national NBA perspective, what this means for the league, because these are two out of only 30 teams that you're competing with. So yes, it's a big deal. But we're also going to try and frame this in a Rockets perspective as best we can. So I'm going to be playing segments throughout this show of both the Detroit and LA reactions. Detroit from Matt Shook, host of the Locked On Pistons podcast. The Clippers from Lucas Hand, host of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Both are going to be five-minute takeaways of what they think are the key storylines coming out of the deal. And then I'm going to give, at the end of the show, my reactions to what they said, as well as just some larger perspective and why, in my opinion, I don't think Chris Paul got a fair shake coming into this season. And if you're a Rockets fan, why I think you should be even more optimistic about the playoff version of Chris Paul than you might already be. Before we play their segments, though, I want to lead off the Blake Griffin discussion by talking about the very short term, what it means, which is that this, over the past 4 days, has really boosted the Rockets' odds in the first round. And yes, the Rockets, likely the 2 seed in the West, which they are now, 35-13, outside shot at the 1, but I'm going to say that at this point, the Rockets are 99% locked into either the number 2 or number 1 seed in the West. It would take something catastrophic for them to fall below that. So you're looking, when you're at a 2 outside shot of a 1, you're going to play a 7 or an 8. I would say there are 4 teams that are squarely in that mix. Portland, Denver, which are kind of blah. The Rockets have beaten those teams every time this season. And then the LA Clippers and the New Orleans Pelicans. Those are the 4 teams that are most probable. Maybe you can throw the Jazz in there if they make a run. We'll have to wait and see what happens on that front. But over the past 4 days, it started Friday night with the Boogie Cousins Achilles injury. That completely changes the calculus for New Orleans. What made New Orleans scary, despite their limitations, was having 2 all-star starter-level players in their starting lineup. That's no longer an issue. So certainly, they are not as scary of a matchup, and the Pelicans did beat the Rockets on Friday night and almost beat them in December, despite James Harden having an incredible game. The Clippers, I never bought into the Clippers being as scary as the Pelicans. I never really saw them as a major threat for the Rockets this season. However, I know a lot of people did, and there's a reason for that. The Clippers were 2-0. Now, of those 2 games, one of them came without Chris Paul, Clint Capella, and Luke Bamute. It was when the Rockets barely resembled themselves on that 5-game losing streak. The second game earlier this month came without James Harden and Nene, so the Rockets were not at full strength in either of those games. But folks, the Clippers did beat them both times. Let's give them credit. I never bought into it being a long-term concern because, A, the absence is on the Rockets' side of things, and B, the Clippers had a lot of players, especially your role players, the former Rockets, playing out of their minds from a revenge perspective. When you're looking at 1 game out of 82, that can make a big difference in the playoffs when everyone is dialed in 100%. I think the importance of that stuff goes down. Nonetheless, the Clippers are 2-0 against the Rockets this season, and so I get the concern from some on Rockets Twitter about them as a matchup. Well, folks, one thing you can't deny, Blake Griffin, is the brightest star on that Clippers team and by far its most visible player. Maybe you could argue that Lou Williams had a similar overall impact this year, but I think it's pretty clear that Lou is going to regress at some point. His percentages right now are just comical for a guard, whereas Blake is more of a consistent player, and again, we know his limitations, not great defensively. In today's pace and space NBA, this is the first year Julie shot threes, and he's been mediocre at that, 34%. There's also the injury-prone label. All of those things are true, but at the same time, Blake is a very good player, and the last time the Clippers played the Rockets, which was a couple of weeks ago, what led to the fallout after the game, or the game that led to the fallout, I should say, involving the bump of Mike D'Antoni, then Trevor Ariza, Gerald Green, the locker room incident, looking for Blake Griffin and Austin Rivers after the game. Folks, in that one, Blake Griffin led the Clippers 29 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, and he did it on 50% shooting from the field. So he's a big part of their success. He has been, not just this season, but over, I believe, the past 9 years. And folks, he's not there anymore. So yes, it dramatically changes the calculus of what the Clippers look like as a potential first-round opponent. And maybe the Clippers sell off altogether. We know there have been rumors about DeAndre Jordan and Lou Williams potentially being on the block. If that happens, I don't think the Clippers are a reasonable playoff opponent at all. For now, I think there's enough talent there. And in this trade, they did get Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, a future first-round pick from the Pistons. So between Harris and Bradley, if the Clippers stay as is, there are enough difference makers to where they could continue to kind of remain around 500 and be at the back of that Western Conference playoff picture, which in theory could line them up with the Rockets. It's certainly possible. But what I would say, the past few days has been a huge boost to the odds of the Rockets in the first round. I would say probably, in my very unofficial opinion, from about 80% to advance to about 90% to advance. And some of you might say, well, if the Rockets lost in the first round, that would be catastrophic anyway. What does it matter? Well, first off, going from 80 to 90%, that's a big deal because it means the other team's probability of success drops from 20 to 10. Of course, these are unofficial numbers, but if we're going to run with that, then yes, hypothetically, that can be a big deal. More than the numbers, though, it's less to me about whether the Rockets could actually be beat in the first round, which, as we said, for a team as good as the Rockets would be catastrophic to lose 4 out of 7 to a team like Denver, Portland, New Orleans, the Clippers, whoever it may be. It's less about whether the Rockets would lose 4 out of 7 and whether they would be challenged. That's the standpoint that I look at it more from. Because when you're wanting to compete with the Warriors, a team that's incredibly good and has just an absurd depth of star-level talent, and you're the Rockets, one of the big factors for Houston in terms of giving them a legitimate shot against the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals is how fresh they are heading into that series. Do the first two rounds tax them to an extent that maybe going into the series, you already see signs of wear and tear from guys like James Harden the same way you did in the second round series against San Antonio a year ago. So even if we accept the premise that the Rockets were favorites regardless, which they would have been in a first round series, and even a hypothetical second round series against whoever they may play, the Timberwolves, the Spurs, the Thunder, etc., etc., even if we accept those premises, then whether you're able to easily dispatch a team in 4 or 5 games without too much stress versus maybe having to go 6 or 7 games, that's a big deal. So yes, the Rockets would be favorites regardless, but taking two teams out of play in recent days, the Pelicans with the Boogie injury, yes, they'll still be competitive, but they're nowhere near as scary. And the Clippers, who, if the roster stays as is, with Tobias Harris and Avery Bradley entering the rotation at the expense of Blake Griffin, it's not like there'll be a huge immediate fall-off in terms of level of play, but in terms of how daunting they are as a playoff opponent, folks, the playoffs are about stars, and two of the teams you could play in the first round, the Pelicans and the Clippers, the past few days have taken enormous hits to their star power. So in terms of their viability as a playoff threat to the Rockets, yes, these past few days, and you never, in the case of the Pelicans and Boogie Cousins, you never wish an injury, certainly. You feel bad for him. It's going to be a brutal recovery from that ruptured Achilles. But nonetheless, from a Rockets standpoint, which is what we do here at Locked On Rockets, the home for daily commentary on the Houston Rockets, we break things down as far as what it means for the Rockets. And the past few days, starting with the Boogie injury and now with the Blake Griffin, these are items at the bottom of the Western Conference playoff picture that do have a correlation with the Rockets, not just their likelihood of advancing through the first round, although it certainly helps, but also how much energy they may have to expend, which then has a trickle-down effect to the version of the Rockets that's going to hypothetically be out there later in the playoffs against certainly the Timberwolves, the Spurs, the Thunder, whoever it may be in the second round, and then, as we all hope, the eventual showdown with the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Now, there's several other angles of this Blake Griffin transaction going from the Clippers to the Pistons that I think also affect the Rockets. Maybe affect the Rockets is too strong, but are at least of note to Rockets fans, I would say, because it certainly, in my opinion, speaks a lot to the legacy of the Clippers in the Blake Griffin era, which is tied to the legacy of Chris Paul. So I think there are some very interesting takeaways that and messages that this deal kind of sends as far as what was really going on in LA. I do want to touch on those, and we're going to do that on the back half of this show. But for now, I'm going to stop and I'm going to play what I promised earlier, which are the reactions from our Pistons and Clippers host, Matt Shook and Lucas Hand, on this Locked On Podcast Network, giving their reactions to this trade, what they think it means for them, the league as a whole. And then to close out the show, I'm going to give my reaction to what you hear from Matt and Lucas. So without further ado, I'm going to begin with the Pistons side of things, because they're the team that's acquiring the star player, Blake Griffin, and this is going to be a reaction from Matt Shook, the host of Locked On Pistons. So, without delaying any longer, here's Matt Shook giving his take on what acquiring Blake Griffin means for the Detroit Pistons.
The Pistons got Blake Griffin in a big deal. on Monday afternoon. Blake's been one of those villains, that one of those guys you have loved to hate over the past several years on the other side of the court. But the good news is that's basically Pistons DNA. Now, it's not exactly the same way that Griffin's built his reputation that the Pistons had over the past several decades with their toughness that has been personified over the years, but we will see how it goes. And certainly it's a lot of money for a long time for a guy with a big injury risk, but we've seen Detroit teams in the past, they've needed to find different ways to get top talent. They haven't really made things happen in free agency, and Stan Van Gundy has not made it happen through the draft in his 4 years so far with the Pistons as well. But hey, the move, it's something interesting, and that's more than we can say about what this team has done over the past decade. It's a franchise that's been lost in the woods since the going-to-work era. Really not much good to say about this team, really not much to say about this team at all. As far as the deal, they didn't give up Luke Kennard, which would have been pretty much a disaster. They didn't give up Stanley Johnson while his value is low and the team could maybe be opportunistic and buy low for him in his third year. So there's some things to like about it. They got rid of the Boban's contract, which is a good thing as well. They did give up that first-round pick, but there doesn't seem to be a whole lot in this draft to love past the top seven or eight players. And hopefully the Pistons pick doesn't end up in the top seven or eight. Right now, I've advocated on this podcast about trading Avery Bradley a bunch in the past couple weeks, so you know where I stand there. As far as Tobias Harris, certainly we're not crazy about losing him in Pistons Nation. He was a great guy, an easy guy to root for the fans. But all season, we've kind of waited for a little bit more from him. He got better going into last year and kind of carried this last year's team through a horrible season and has been the most reliable scorer this season as well. But we've talked a lot about some of those quiet 20-point games that we've always been waiting for a little bit more from him. He can't seem to get to the free throw line in late in games and can't really be a good scorer in the fourth quarter. We need someone who can get a bucket a little bit easier than that. Well, Blake Griffin is here, and he's that guy. He's a wide body. He's a crafty scorer. I remember when the Pistons beat the Clippers this year, Griffin at times can kind of just put his butt right into Anthony Tolliver, take him down to the lane, and did a lot of work on one of the top defenders in the league, although Tolliver's not as strong as Blake Griffin, and that was going to be a matchup problem. But those are some of the matchup problems that the Pistons will look to exploit when they have Blake Griffin on their side, and it's something they didn't have before. Another interesting thing with Griffin is, what does this do to Andre Drummond's spot in the high post of the offense? We saw that Andre's had good court vision there, but also saw that he was limited when some of the things broke down initially when that high post offensive set. No way was Andre going to be knocking down anything outside of 8 feet, but he also couldn't drive to the hole when he tried to go from the three-point line as well. Seems like Blake Griffin would be good for that spot in the post, but then what do you do with Andre? But I think some of those thoughts of this guy's in the high post, this guy's in the low post, kind of oversimplifies things a little bit. There are a lot of possessions in an NBA season, and why can't guys alternate between spots in the posts along the way? And along those lines, Andre, with his, you know, maybe get him back a little bit towards the baseline, not in a post-up position, but kind of out of the way a little bit at times, stay out of the way of Blake's real estate in the post, maybe set some screens on the perimeter, and also kind of take advantage of maybe some of the defense sagging towards Blake, look for lobs as well. And then a lot of this Pistons franchise hinges on Reggie Jackson getting back healthy, and maybe we'll see if Blake and Reggie can kind of duplicate some of the success they had in Lob City with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin there. But some other scattered thoughts. This is probably an indication that Stan Van Gundy is back for next season to coach out the fifth and final year of his contract, and also in the front office as well. Whatever happens the rest of the way with this season, you can make the argument that this move and this new team is going to take more than the 34 games left this season to be analyzed. But my bottom line is this. Before the trade, there was nothing really to like about this Pistons team this season, and really not much to look forward to next year too. Well, now it will be interesting, which is more than we could say on Monday morning. Since the trade, which was only a couple hours ago now, I've heard from about 20 different people on texts, and I promise you that these are not people who are thinking about the Pistons over the weekend. I threw out a query on Twitter about what do you think, and got all sorts of responses, most of them negative, but at least that there were some responses there. Plus, hey, the Pistons are in the news for the first time in a long time, and that's a good thing for a change. Will it be a good thing a few years from now? I'm certainly skeptical about it, but it might be fun to find out.
That was the Detroit reaction to the Blake Griffin deal, courtesy of Matt Shook, host of our Locked On Pistons podcast on this Locked On Podcast Network. Now, if you stick with me for just a few moments, I've got a Clippers reaction from Lucas Hand, host of the Locked On Clippers podcast. That one will also be about 5 minutes of his general takeaways from the Los Angeles side of the fence on this Blake Griffin transaction.
So, the Clippers traded Blake Griffin. I'm Lucas Han, host of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm going to walk you through the Clippers' perspective on this deal. The first thing that you have to know about this deal is it's tremendously emotionally impactful for Clippers fans, probably in a way that it doesn't impact the new members of the front office, Steve Ballmer, who's owned the team for a few years, Jerry West, who's newly brought in. Blake Griffin was picked with the Clippers' first overall pick in 2009. He's been at the center of every discussion regarding the organization in the last 9 years. He scored over 10,000 points for the team. He's been an All-Star 5 times. He's been on an All-NBA team 4 times. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal player. And in a big part, even more than the Chris Paul era, the overall Blake Griffin era, which started before and now stretched half a season after Chris Paul's time with the team, lifted the Clippers out of irrelevance and kind of put them on the national map, put them in nationally televised games, put them in SportsCenter highlights in a way that they just hadn't been before. And probably in a way that a lot of other teams or fan bases might not be able to understand, because there are few teams in sports that were as irrelevant before that 2009 draft as the Clippers had been. But Blake Griffin made the team relevant. He made people care about them. And even with all of his faults, with his shortcomings, he certainly is not someone who was popular with other fan bases around the league, but he is a guy who has meant a lot to the Clippers and their fans over the last decade. And so it means a lot to these fans that Blake Griffin has been moved. But from the front office's perspective, they almost can't afford to look at it in that emotional light. And they felt as though Blake Griffin, about to turn 29 years old in March, with his injury history, having missed significant amounts of games in each of the last 3 years, having missed 15 games so far this season, seemingly always getting banged up and hurt just in time for the playoffs, and not being at his best in the postseason, and with a massive 5-year contract that the Clippers just had to give him last summer to retain him, they felt like it was something that they had to get out of for the long-term benefit of the team and of being able to build a winning and championship-contending team. Frankly, they felt like paying Blake Griffin $30 million a year this year and more in each of the next 4 years after this one was not something that they could build a championship team around. And that's not something that is easy to swallow for Clippers fans who have loved Blake Griffin for so many years. It's, you know, maybe it's not something that ends up being a good trade. The package they got for him certainly isn't something that blows you away. It wasn't some godfather offer. They got Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, Boban Marjanovic, a 2018 first-round pick and 2019 second-round pick from the Pistons, which is a decent package, but I think it's the kind of package that says to me the Clippers were looking to move Blake Griffin to get out from under this contract to try to retool and rebuild on the fly rather than the Pistons called the Clippers with some phenomenal offer that blew the Clippers away and they just had to trade Blake Griffin even though it wasn't something that they wanted to do. And so I think that this is a really, really telling move for where the front office is, how they evaluate this roster and the other players on the roster, and what they think the right move is going forward for this team with, you know, in regards to other trades and other free agency moves. I think the Clippers are going to continue to sell talent at the deadline, which is not something that I necessarily foresaw them doing. I certainly didn't think they would move Blake Griffin, but guys like Lou Williams, guys like DeAndre Jordan, even a newcomer like Avery Bradley, are all guys that the Clippers could look to move in the next 10 days as we head towards the trade deadline, trying to acquire more draft picks, more young talent, create more cap flexibility going forward. It is going to be fascinating to see what this franchise and front office does in the next 10 days and in the weeks and months to come heading into the draft and free agency. And it's really, really going to be interesting to me to track in the next 5 years how this trade looks for each team, both in how Blake Griffin, whether he's able to stay healthy or not, what his production levels look like in Detroit, how his game ages as he reaches 32 years old at the end of this contract, and how his deal may limit Detroit's cap flexibility. On the other hand, from the Clippers' perspective, are they ever able to find a talent like Blake Griffin again to build this team around? And if they aren't, it could be a failure even if the contract would have been crippling. So it's definitely something that's going to be really, really interesting to keep an eye on. If you want more coverage of this deal and of the Clippers heading into the trade deadline, be sure to check out the Locked On Clippers podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Lucas J. Han and check out ClipsNation.com.
Good stuff there in those two segments. First from Matt Shook of Locked On Pistons and then from Lucas Han of Locked On Clippers. Thanks to them for editing up their reactions and sending us this abbreviated version for discussion here on Locked On Rockets. Now, as far as the Houston angles from all of this and the Blake Griffin news, we discussed leading off that certainly it makes the playoff run a little easier. That combined with the Boogie Cousins Achilles injury, when you look at your four most probable first-round opponents, the Pelicans, the Clippers, the Nuggets, and the Blazers, certainly it's not as daunting right now as maybe it appeared even just 5 days ago. So yes, there's a Houston angle there. But perhaps more than just the first round of the playoffs, in which the Rockets would be heavily favored regardless, what's interesting to me about the Blake Griffin news from a Houston perspective is what, in my opinion, it says or should say about Chris Paul. And what I mean by that, when Chris Paul made the move to Houston in late June this year, a lot of the national outcry from NBA Twitter, some of the leading voices, I would call them hot take artists, but you guys know the takes that were out there, there was some doubt thrown on it about whether the pairing of Chris Paul and James Harden would work in the playoffs. We know the stigma that's out there with James Harden. I've discussed in the past why I think it's unfair, but regardless, it's there and it's going to be there until James Harden goes out and wins a ring. It's on him to go prove them wrong, and I think he embraces that challenge. It's out there with Chris as well, and we've spent a lot of this year addressing, because James is now in his sixth season in Houston, why some of the narratives about James Harden aren't fair. But I think this Blake move is interesting because it shows some of the narratives about Chris Paul's alleged playoff shortcomings. They aren't really that fair either. And that's big because when you pair Chris Paul with James Harden, both of them are now playing with by far the best running mate that they have ever had in the NBA. And the Blake Griffin trade is a perfect time to revisit that, because when you listen to the two reactions, both from the Pistons in acquiring Blake and the Clippers in trading him, there's one common theme. Neither side thinks that this was a superstar player dealt. This was not a deal like, say, the James Harden trade 6 years ago that just shook the foundation of the NBA. This is a trade of a good but flawed player, and everyone seems to understand that on both sides, who may be making simply too much money to be worth it as the so-called franchise player for the Clippers or anyone moving forward. Now, the Pistons are willing to take that risk because they essentially have been irrelevant for the past decade. I get what they're thinking on this. And there was a scout that told ESPN's Tim McMahon yesterday, you can check his Twitter page, that maybe Blake going to Detroit will be the best thing for him, the same way Chris Webber, 20 years ago going to Sacramento ended up being for his career, in that there's no nightlife, there's not all the off-court things, he will have no choice but to focus on basketball. Maybe it will be better for his development, the same way moving to the Kings ultimately was for Chris Webber. So I understand what the Pistons are thinking here, but both sides, no one is over the moon in terms of the Pistons acquiring Blake, the Clippers especially despondent in trading him, and certainly the package that the Clippers got, as Lucas laid out, it's not like the Pistons just overwhelmed them with an offer. This was the Clippers making a choice to move on, and essentially what it tells you is that they signed him pretty much with the idea, led by Jerry West, who's now their new architect and one of the more respected architects in the NBA in terms of building a team, with the purpose of eventually trading him in mind. Because, folks, you do not trade a franchise player at 28 on a five-year deal. In July 2019, that's allegedly when the Clippers want to make their run at free agents, including Kawhi Leonard. Even then, Blake will only be 30 years old. So the reason that they're willing to trade this, and this is an NBA where stars are the commodity. If you have one star, well, you need to use that to get another star. The same way the Rockets had James Harden, use him to get Chris Paul. And then from there, you may need to use those two to try and get LeBron James. Because in today's NBA with the Warriors, and you can even throw the Rockets in there now as well, the bar is so incredibly high. And stars are the most valuable commodity that there is. So for Blake Griffin, at 28 years old and newly signed to be traded, that tells you what Jerry West, one of the most respected personnel and team builders in the NBA, thinks of him. Because most stars, when they move, you look back at the summer Chris Paul
Jimmy Butler, Paul George, they move because their contracts are about to be up. In other words, the team trading them is afraid that they're going to be left with nothing if they don't act, so they move just to get something, often in a leverage situation. In this case, the Clippers literally just signed Blake to a 5-year deal. So there was no pressure on them to move him. They are simply moving him because they think it is in their best basketball interest to do it, which is a pretty strong indictment that Jerry West does not see Blake Griffin as a franchise piece. Because if he did, that's one of the most rare commodities that there is, and he's only 28 years old. Again, even if they're targeting July 2019, Blake would only be 30 years old then. There should be plenty of time. So it's a pretty strong indictment, in my opinion, of what Jerry West, one of the most respected guys in the league, thinks of Blake Griffin, especially after watching him up close for over half of this season, all after signing him to the new contract in the offseason, going through the production of raising Blake's jersey to the rafters and mock presentation, etc., etc. And some of you might be saying, duh, we know Blake Griffin, he's a good player, 23-8-5, but he's not a franchise player. Why are you telling me this? Well, the reason I'm telling you this is because if we accept that Blake Griffin is not a franchise player, why exactly are we so up in arms about Chris Paul's tenure in Los Angeles? We know DeAndre Jordan isn't a star. They were often referred to as a big three, but DeAndre Jordan is a limited player offensively. He's a difference maker on the defensive end, sure, but he's certainly not a piece that you say, wow, this is a franchise transformational piece. He's a solid defensive-oriented center. Blake Griffin, he's limited as well, and that's even before getting into the injury concerns. J.J. Redick, hell of a shooter, but certainly not a star player, regardless of the fact that he's making $23 million this year in Philadelphia. So when you look at those Clippers teams led by Chris Paul with a supporting cast, the biggest names being guys like Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, J.J. Redick, Jamal Crawford, and then we look at who they were competing with the last 3 years against the Warriors, one of the best teams in NBA history, two NBA titles, and the 1 year they didn't win the NBA title, they won the Western Conference and they won 73 games, the most in NBA history. So one of the great teams of all time in the Warriors. The year before that, the Clippers lost in the playoffs to the Thunder, a team led by Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. By the way, here's a question for you, a trivia. Who's the last Western Conference team to beat the Warriors in the playoffs? Actually, it's Chris Paul's Clippers, who did it in 7 games back in the 2014 playoffs. That's the last time that the Warriors went down in the Western Conference postseason. So I know there's all these hot takes about Chris Paul. They never won a ring in L.A., but it's not like they disappointed. They won in the mid-50s. It felt like every single year they were a quality team. They just didn't get hardware. And so if we accept that Blake Griffin is not a franchise player, and we know the limitations of guys like DeAndre Jordan, J.J. Redick, Jamal Crawford, whatever names you want to throw in there, then what exactly are we so angry about Chris Paul not doing? If Chris Paul was the only legitimate top 10 player, superstar-level talent on that team, how is he supposed to, by himself, be as good as the Warriors? Even if you want to go back before the Warriors, look at that Spurs team that went to back-to-back finals against the Heat, some of the most exquisite basketball you'll ever see. Look at the Thunder, who beat the Clippers in the playoffs that year and had both Durant and Russell Westbrook, two top 10 players, as opposed to just one in Los Angeles, because we're talking about the limitations here of Blake and DeAndre Jordan. Even aside from the injuries, and injuries certainly had a big part of it, we know that in the last 3 years, two of them, Blake Griffin, did not finish the postseason. One of them, Chris Paul, did not due to injuries, and that played a role. But even in the healthy years, folks, look how good the Warriors were. Look how good the Spurs were before that. Look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, led by Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. If we accept that Blake Griffin is not a franchise player, it seems pretty clear the Pistons don't think they're getting a franchise player, the Clippers don't think they traded one, then why are we so angry as an NBA community about Chris Paul never having won major hardware in Los Angeles? It was a flawed supporting cast. And yes, you better believe that is understandable in the context of the NBA this decade. Really, ever since the LeBron James move, although that was in the East, we've had this tendency towards stars teaming up, and everyone wanted to make the Clippers into a big three because L.A. is a big market. There's certainly a lot of exposure. There's a lot of endorsement deals with guys like Blake Griffin and even DeAndre Jordan to a lesser extent, certainly Chris Paul. And so people wanted to call it a big three. They wanted the Clippers to be good because especially with the Lakers falling off, it's nice for the league if there's a contender in Los Angeles. But when you look at the actual basketball situation in L.A. and compare it to the modern Warriors. Compare it to the Spurs before that, when they had Tim Duncan still near his peak, and Kawhi, and Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Greg Popovich, etc., etc., to the Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook-led Oklahoma City Thunder. Why are we so up in arms about what happened or didn't happen with Chris Paul's LA teams? To me, it looks like they did what you'd expect them to do. They won in the mid-50s. It felt like every single year they were competitive, just ultimately not good enough to actually win the West. Even the playoff series that everybody likes to talk about, when they blew a 3-1 lead to the Rockets. Folks, Dwight Howard in the 2014 and 2015 postseasons, that version of Dwight Howard, to me, is more impactful than anything Blake Griffin has been in his entire career. Dwight is a true difference maker on both ends of the floor. We all remember hashtag playoff Dwight. Now, I know it ended a little sour in Houston, and the Rockets hiring Mike D'Antoni went in a different direction. But folks, even that Rockets team that came back from down 3-1, everybody likes to say, how did the Clippers blow that lead? Even that team, with Harden and Dwight, had two, I would say, at least fringe top 10 level difference makers. That's how good playoff Dwight was, especially those first 2 years in Houston. The Clippers did not have that. So if we accept that Blake Griffin is not that guy, that he's a good but not great player, ultimately flawed on both ends of the court, and that's even before talking about the injuries, then why are we talking about Chris Paul and his playoff shortcomings or chokes or whatever you want to call it? The reality is that the Clippers just did not have enough talent in those years to compete with the big boys of the West. They had enough to be competitive, but to actually win 4 out of 7, the Warriors, the Spurs before then, the Thunder with Westbrook and Durant, who were there every year, they just had a higher caliber of top 10 level difference makers. That's just the reality. And so it's the same as James Harden. Just as James Harden, we can't say what he's going to do in the playoffs because we have not seen him with a guy like Chris Paul in his career, especially from a playmaking perspective. We also can't say that about Chris Paul because what he's going to do in the playoffs because we have not seen him with a player like James Harden as his running mate. So what you have in Houston, the synergies, assuming both of those guys are healthy, knock on wood, is you have a pairing of Chris Paul and James Harden with by far the best running mate that they have ever had, and I would say overall the most talented supporting cast that they have had. Those Clippers teams, while good, they were nothing transformative. There was not a single year in there where you look at the Clippers and said, wow, this is the favorite. This is the team that should win the Western Conference. And so if we accept that, if we accept that Blake, DeAndre, JJ, ultimately nice pieces but are all flawed, and that Chris Paul is the only top 10 level player, the only true superstar, then why should we expect him to be as good as the Warriors or the Spurs before that or the Durant and Westbrook Thunder? To me, if we accept that Blake is not a franchise player, and for a lot of his career, Blake has been identified as a franchise player because he's certainly a big name with the endorsements. He was the number one pick in the 2009 draft. He plays in a huge market. People want him to be a franchise player, but ultimately, he's not. It should have been obvious before then. Maybe it was obvious for a lot of you guys listening. It should have been to me, but it certainly was to me. But in my opinion, to actually see him get traded for a package headlined by Tobias Harris and Avery Bradley at 28 years old in the first year of a 5-year contract, essentially making it clear that the Clippers re-signed him with the idea of trading him, if not the outright purpose, certainly as a leading option in their mind, it's pretty clear that the Clippers do not see him as that guy. It's not like the Pistons overwhelmed them with an offer either. And so, yes, if there were any lingering doubts about Chris Paul in the playoffs from here's yours in LA, to me, this gives even more perspective about why those teams ultimately just, it wasn't choking, it wasn't anything else, they just ultimately did not have the talent to be as good as the top Western Conference teams in those years, and their results are about what they should have been based on the talent. Now Chris Paul has better talent around him in Houston, and we'll have to see what it does in the playoffs. But I don't think what's happened in the past for Chris Paul without James Harden is particularly predictive of what's going to happen when the two are together. Just as a few weeks ago I said what James Harden has done in the playoffs in the past without Chris Paul is not necessarily predictive of what he's going to do in this postseason now that he has Chris Paul. The acquisition of Paul by the Rockets, it's going to be good for both guys. And so, no, I don't think what's happened in the past in the playoffs for either player is particularly predictive of what's going to happen this postseason. I think a lot of you guys probably know that already, but if there are any lingering doubts, because we know the takes that are out there, they're lazy, but they're out there about the playoff shortcomings of James Harden and Chris Paul. To me, this throws even more cold water seeing Blake Griffin move for an underwhelming return headlined by Tobias Harris and Avery Bradley. The other angle of this that's, I would say, less telling and more just funny to me as a Rockets fan, the Clippers, you can certainly say that other teams around the league can hold it against them that they traded a player half a season after signing a new 5-year contract. And I'm sure there are rival teams and future off seasons, July 2018, July 2019, whenever the Clippers do try and use some of their cap space to be more active in free agency. To me, I see July 2019 as a lot more realistic than July 2018. The Clippers, Mike can ask for a meeting with LeBron, and you know he's got some business interest in LA. I'm sure he'll listen. But folks, LeBron James is not going to leave Cleveland to play for a team headlined by Sam Decker, Montrezl Harrell, and Pat Beverly. Folks, he would stay in Cleveland if it's just about best fit and being comfortable. If he leaves Cleveland, he's going to want a chance to actually win a ring. And sorry, the Clippers do not have the pieces for LeBron to do that. I think it's more realistic for the Clippers, as posted late last night by a few people, including the Washington Post, to be targeting July 2019. Maybe at that point, you have even more cap room. You're able to kind of build some of your younger pieces. They'll be getting a draft pick from Detroit. And by then, maybe you're more attractive to the tier free agents headlined by Kawhi Leonard that summer. But regardless, whenever the Clippers do try and get these meetings, teams competing against them are going to say, how can you trust what the Clippers are offering you? Because look, they offered Blake Griffin the moon, signed him a max deal, did the whole fake ceremony with his jersey in the rafters, and they traded him a half a season in. They'll play the disloyalty card, and generally that would work. Well, the Clippers, they knew all that, and they didn't care. Part of it's because they just see Blake Griffin as not a franchise-level player. They made a calculated decision in the summer that even if they didn't think he was worth that contract, they thought ultimately they could recoup some value for him down the line that would be better than just letting him walk, so they were willing to take the hit. Another reason why I think the Clippers were willing to do this, despite agents and rival teams potentially trying to use the disloyalty narrative against them, I think they understand that Blake Griffin is not that respected. And that, while not necessarily telling about the Rockets, it's funny because we're barely over 2 weeks removed from the post-game altercation that resulted in suspensions for Trevor Ariza and Gerald Green. It started with Blake Griffin bumping Mike D'Antoni, somehow not being disciplined, which is just absolutely ridiculous. And Blake's actually a repeat offender of that, as pointed out by Mark Jackson, former Warriors coach, who showed a clip of Blake doing the same thing with him a few years back when Jackson was coaching the Warriors. And Mark said that even being from New York, he still considered that push league. So part of the reason, in my opinion, this is just my speculation, that the Clippers were willing to take the PR hit of being disloyal or whatever, I think that they know that Blake Griffin is not that respected around the league. Now, not saying that people don't think he's a good player, but he's not a foundational piece. He doesn't have the relationships that guys like Chris Paul, LeBron James, even James Harden, we found out ultimately that James's relationship with Chris played a big part in getting Chris to Houston. But folks, if Blake Griffin had a lot of friends, then yeah, it could be pretty damaging to treat a guy like that. The disloyalty narrative might spread a little easier. But at this point, folks, I don't think the Clippers fear that. I think there's a reason why players like Trevor Ariza and Chris Paul responded as they did. And certainly Mike D'Antoni. Mike D'Antoni is one of the more respected coaches in the league, one of the more calm guys. As far as his interactions with other teams and especially other players, it's a relationship-driven league. He's about as calm, as cordial as it gets. So to see Mike D'Antoni turn around like he did in that Clippers game on camera and say, hey, F you, that is a tremendous... I was stunned to see Mike do that. I have never seen him lose his cool like that, which speaks to, A, the severity of what Blake Griffin did. Certainly, even if the NBA didn't discipline him for it, it is a big deal. You don't just bump a 66-year-old man. That's dangerous. But besides that, folks, I think it shows you the respect or lack thereof that Mike and other players around the Rockets, I'm also going to take an educated guess and say around the league, have or don't have for Blake. If Blake had a particularly big Rolodex of friends around the league, especially... I'm sure he has friends, but in terms of star-level connections, the way guys like Chris Paul and LeBron James do, yeah, I would bet that Mike D'Antoni might have a little bit of a longer leash. I also don't know if Trevor Ariza would be enraged to the point where he felt like he needed to settle the score, by all accounts, in the tunnel after the game. Not a secret tunnel, although the memes were funny. But I think the extent to which the Rockets go, it reflects, A, what Griffin did, but B, this is a guy who is really not that well-respected. I don't think the Rockets are all that alone in feeling that way. So, yes, I do think that it gives a little more justification and rationalization for why they behaved as they did. But beyond that, folks, I think it's pretty clear that the Clippers did not see Blake Griffin as a piece that would draw other free agents down the line. Because we're in a league, as we said, it takes one star to draw two, and then often it takes two stars to join three. Stars want to team up. So, in theory, if the Clippers want to go after big names, we mentioned Kawhi Leonard, in future off seasons, then you would think that you would want to start not from zero, but from one. You would like to have a piece like Blake Griffin that you could use to draw other star players around the league to the team. In theory, that would be better than starting with zero. Except in this case, Jerry West apparently did not agree with that assessment, and I think it shows you that beyond just his limitations as a player, in my opinion, Blake Griffin does not have that draw in terms of his relationships around the league to where you have a long list of players who are excited about playing with him. And that further, of course, there's some humorous justification for what happened with the Rockets in that game a couple of weeks ago. I think it shows you the rarity why the Rockets acted that way. But also, if you ever wondered why the Clippers couldn't go all the way in terms of attracting another star talent in the years with Chris Paul, perhaps that's a reason. Perhaps Blake Griffin is not that much of a draw around the league. That's certainly not as obvious of a takeaway as what we said earlier about the limitations of those Clippers teams with Blake Griffin. But even building around him in terms of attracting further star talent, I think it's pretty clear through this move that the Clippers, who are certainly trying to still build, it's not like Blake Griffin trading him was the only way they could do that. They could have gotten DeAndre Jordan's $20-plus million salary off the books. Could have done the same with Lou Williams. Between trading DeAndre and Lou, you could have cleared $30 million right there if it was just about cap room. It was not just about cap room. It was also about them not believing in Blake. And so certainly that reflects his basketball ability, first and foremost. But beyond that, I also don't think they see him as a particular draw off the court as well. And I think there are a lot of reasons for that. Maybe his basketball limitations are part of the package. But also, I think it speaks to his personality and some of the factors that led guys like Mike D'Antoni and Trevor Ariza to get very respected veteran in the case of Trevor Ariza, longtime coach, Mike D'Antoni, reigning coach of the year. Those guys don't get that upset that easily. So I think it goes to show you, while I'm not 100% justifying what they did, I'm not saying it's ever okay to go into another team's locker room, no matter what gets said. At the same time, if you're wondering how it got to that point, how the situation escalated the way it did, then folks, in my opinion, Blake Griffin, there are some red flags, not just on him as a basketball player, but on him as a guy, on his attitude. And I think the Clippers moving on from him, even with the PR hit from trading a guy just months into signing a new max five-year deal, I think it speaks volumes about what Jerry West thinks about Blake Griffin, the basketball player, but also to a lesser extent, what he thinks about Blake Griffin, the guy, and how likable or how not likable he is around the league. And as a draw for future free agents, the Clippers, of course, try and rebuild and get to the level that teams like the Warriors and Rockets are at right now. So with that, I will wrap things right there. As always, thanks to you guys for tuning in. We've had a longer show today, but folks, I wanted to expound on this because to me, the Blake Griffin trade is fascinating, not just from the shock value, but it says a lot about not just the Rockets' short-term playoff options, but also the fate of Blake Griffin over his career has been intertwined so much with Chris Paul. So to see a statement like this, it can't, I don't see how you could not take at least some indication of what it means for those Chris Paul teams. And of course, when you reflect on Chris Paul's history, well, yeah, there's a lot of predictive value for us here in Houston, because we're about to get on just a couple of months from now our first playoff run here in Houston in the Chris Paul era with the Rockets. So that's why I went on for 45 plus minutes, and this one's a fascinating subject to me. I know some of you guys want to just talk about the day-to-day, and that's fine, because folks, well, we're just a few hours away from a basketball game. So the good news, starting tonight, we'll be back to the day-in, day-out grind with your Rockets, led by Chris Paul and James Harden. Hopefully Chris Paul is out there tonight. We'll see. Questionable with right groin soreness. But either way, the Rockets tonight against the Magic, they should be favorites, whether Chris Paul plays or not, based on the presence of guys like James Harden, Clint Capella, and Eric Gordon. But regardless, no matter what happens, folks, we'll have you covered right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball. So the best way to follow us in real time, of course, is Twitter. If you're not already following me, you can do so at Ben Dubose. The show you can follow at Locked On Rockets. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Also, don't forget about our Facebook. That's facebook.com/lockedonrockets or lockedonrockets.com. That's our new website. All sorts of ways where you can find out what we're doing, all sorts of good content on the Rockets, and also ways you can interact with us. As I said, if you've got questions, suggestions, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. For now, folks, I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your Tuesday and stick with us right here at Locked On Rockets, because in just a few short hours, we'll have our postgame recap as the Rockets, now 35-13, winners of 5 of 6 since the return of James Harden, return to the basketball floor tonight for their 49th game of the 2017-2018 season, taking on the Orlando Magic here at the friendly confines of Toyota Center in Houston. Hope to see a few of you guys out there tonight. Until then, folks, enjoy your day, and we'll be talking again right here after the game, right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.